SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing, Emily?
I am doing great. Still reeling from the Cincinnati Notre Dame game, trying to recover because that was a wild one.
Well, yeah, and you were there with like Joey Chestnut just hanging out. So
yeah. Well, it's complicated, but we were kicking off our college football all-star eating tour, but we have a lot of kinks to iron out is what we learned. And Notre Dame was great. Everybody that we worked with was phenomenal, from their SID to their athletic department. And we ended up being in the president's suite, which is incredible in that stadium. Yeah. It was like, I had never been on that side before in the boxes. I'm always in the press box, and it was really incredible. They had this like deck outside and you could stand out there and watch. So we watched the fourth quarter out there, which was neat. And you could see the dome and Touchdown Jesus to your left. So it was really, really cool, but it was a crazy game. I thought for a minute that Notre Dame was going to come back there in that fourth quarter.
We'll talk about it a lot more. They're not our first game on the list, though. They are probably the game we'll spend the most time on, if I had to take a guess. I mean, I even wore my Notre Dame jersey just to be for it. This is a green Jimmy Clausen, which everyone can clearly see through the podcast.
Oh my God, Jimmy Clausen. Yep.
Wow. I've had it a long, long time.
I love that. I love that for you.
Oh yeah, it's great. No, but that was a really great game. I think if Notre Dame started Drew Pine instead of Jack Cohn, they would have won. But that is something we can dive into a couple of teams from
now. We'll start at the top.
Yeah, because we've got a few games to review that happened before Cincinnati Notre Dame kicked off, including on Friday night, Houston 45, Tulsa 10.
Yeah.
All right. That was
not what we expected. Although I did think
it was going to be a close game. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people thought it was going to be closer, given that Houston, not exactly a dominant team thus far, and definitely not on the road.
Yeah, they haven't really played anyone too tough. The toughest game they had was Texas Tech coming into this, and they were fine for one half against Texas Tech and terrible for the other half.
Right.
But at the same time, most people don't think that highly of Texas Tech. Whether or not that's fair to Tech is another thing, because they're 4-1 now, I think.
Right.
But again, it's just quality of competition, small sample sizes. We're getting close to halfway through the season, though, so is it still a small sample size? Not really anymore, at least as far as the whole sport is a small sample size, though. You know, 130 teams should play 12 games. It's hard to do a full deep dive on that. But it's Houston at this point is the team I feel the weirdest about in the conference, I think. Because
really?
I think so. Because I don't believe in them, but they're 4-1. Right. And I think they're going to end up like 9-3 on the year looking at their schedule, because it's not that tough schedule from here.
Yeah.
Dana to me is a guy who should be on the hot seat, just given what Houston is as a program, where they should be and what he has done. And he's probably going to get off that with this year, but I don't know that that's earned. I know that this offense is capable. I don't think they're explosive. I know the defense is capable. I think they are chaotic for what it's worth, which is at times good, at times bad defensively. Some individual players are excellent on Houston. I just don't know that I trust them yet. And I think that's my issue, is I don't trust them. Tulsa, I've got at this point, I don't have any reservations about how I feel about Tulsa. They stink. I'm not picking them again.
Ever? No matter what?
Not no matter what. I'm sure they're going to play like Temple, USF, Navy. Those games are going to be those are going to be games to think about, down the line. We'll see how the season goes. But no, Tulsa just, I think that to me is the bigger storyline than Houston looked great. I think Tulsa looked really bad. I think Philip Montgomery really needs to be on the hot seat, because you can't exist once every 4 years being good and the other 3 years being terrible. That's kind of the cycle that Tulsa's in with him. So I think they need to evaluate where he's at going forward, especially as the conference shifts underneath their feet.
Yeah.
Got anything else to add? Because you picked this game correctly, so I messed up somewhere.
I did.
Maybe that's why I'm mad at Tulsa.
I didn't have faith in either team really, but I had less faith in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just had this feeling that Houston was finally going to put it together. I didn't think it was going to be that much.
I guess I gave Tulsa too much credit for being at home, but mm-hmm. you know, we said that this was going to be a game where we learn a lot about both teams. And yeah. I think we did. I think I learned that Tulsa is not ready to compete in the conference this year. You know what I mean? And I think that Houston's, yeah. you know, a lot more capable than I was giving them credit for, though I still want to see them do it against a team that I respect, which, again, not to be rude to the teams they've played, but Rice, Grambling, Tulsa, these are not teams that, you know, I have a ton of, you know, they're just not teams I think are that good. So I just want to see them do it against a team with a winning record now.
Yeah, I was surprised but I was glad to see the run game come out for Houston, you know, freshman Alton McCaskill.
You'll nail it. Yeah.
I want to call him Catskills. That's all I want to call Alton Catskills over there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure it's happened,
but he was very good. Yeah. No.
He was really fun to watch.
And that's the thing is Houston should always have players like that who are young and capable of, you know, surprising you just with their natural athleticism. So it's good to see them have that come out and actually show, because it doesn't always show, you know.
I'm kind of bummed he didn't get any of the honors for the week.
Really good off, like, I mean, we'll get to the ECU Tulane game, but ECU had their running back, what's his name,
Keaton Mitchell.
He was insane.
He rushed for a career high 222 yards and 2 touchdowns in the win, but McCaskill had 3 touchdowns
they're
both freshmen, so
Mitchell,
whatever. Why does the average per carry matter more than the scores? Because the points are more valuable.
Well, what if you ran an 80 yards, get tripped up at the 5-yard line, had to come out because you just ran 80 yards and they give it to someone else? That's not, you know, you did most of the work there.
And what if you get 2 big breakaway runs and that's why you're averaging so many yards? That's not impressive. That's just lucky and good blocking.
Well,
agree to disagree here, but I think they should have at least thrown him in there. Like, hey, we'd also like to give honor roll mentions to this kid because
he probably earned an honor roll mention, but there's a lot of really good offensive. I said he probably earned one, not that he got one.
Oh, you're saying that he earned probably it in our minds.
Yes.
We should come up with our own honors is what we should do.
Yeah. Start doing them on Sundays or whatever.
Yeah. And then we can, you know, we may not always agree with who the AAC is going to pick.
Yeah.
So he gets my offensive player of the week. So
move full player of the week. Not just
full player of the week, full player of the week.
All right. But yeah, no, Houston dominated this game. Yes. I think that talking about the X's and O's, so what happened on the field aren't really fair to it. They were just bigger, faster, stronger. Most of that game, it was just
better.
Tulsa rolled over. Our second game was, I think, shocking to me. Memphis 31, Temple 34. This is 2 weeks in a row now where Memphis has blown 3 score leads. That's not good.
Yeah.
I thought the Memphis offense was fine. They were not great. They had their moments where they were great, but they were not consistently great throughout that game. But 31 points is usually going to be enough to beat a team like Temple, or at least you hope it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Temple also was just good on offense, though, which is something we haven't seen from them, at least against a higher level competition team yet this year. And it's a thing I don't think many people were expecting to see from Temple much at all this year.
I knew they were going to put it together eventually. I wasn't sure it was going to be this season.
I was not expecting it to be Memphis.
But DeJuan Mathis had a game, 35 of 49 for 322 yards, 3 touchdowns.
He gets
honor roll honors from the American. He tied a 53-year-old school single game record with 35 completions.
Did you see that touchdown pass he threw to, I think it was Jaden Blue, who like stuck it with one hand? Like twisting off.
There was a collage of one-handed catches from this weekend alone for college football. And that was one that made it. And I remember seeing the highlight and being like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was okay, that was a great catch. Ahmad Anderson had 36 yards per catch for Temple. So like they were good. I mean, Memphis did a better job spreading the ball around. The running game still wasn't what it used to be a couple years back when Memphis was really great. I think if they want to get back to that Memphis team that like can win just by playing offense, they need to get the running game back to where it was. Good is fine, but they were great at one point. My bigger concern for Memphis is really that they are blowing big leads to teams that, I mean, UTSA is very good. You know, Temple, though, is not at the top of the conference. You should beat Temple. You know, there's no reason why they should have come back on you. I think part of it is the Memphis offense goes so fast that when it doesn't quite click on a drive, your defense is tired. That's a guess, though. But that's a guess. That's not like, you know, I watched the game and I was just going to myself, like, I don't quite know what's wrong with Memphis in this game that Temple's staying around, because I don't think that Temple can match them talent-wise. So I don't think they should have.
Yeah.
You know, a couple fumbles also didn't help. That's, you know, short fields and loss of possessions. That's always going to help the other team to lose the turnover battle like that. I liked how aggressive Temple was going for it pretty consistently on fourth down. That, you know, I think is a thing you need to do in games when the other teams are going to score 30 plus points on you. But I also think it might be time for us to reevaluate both these teams a little bit. Is Temple improving or a little bit better than we were giving them credit for? Is Memphis a little bit worse than we were giving them credit for? Because if you go through Memphis's wins so far in the season, you know, it's an FCS game. It is, who did they beat? Arkansas State, who is bad at this point. I think we can agree they're bad. And they only beat them by five. You let up, you know what I mean? Like, but at this point, like, not to be mean to Arkansas State, but they're 1-4 with a loss to Tulsa, you know, just throwing out there. And their only win's an FCS game. You know, then the Mississippi State game, tons of fun. Definitely an SEC win. Kind of fluky when you got a couple calls go your way.
Right. So
I'm not sold on Memphis. I'm more sold on Temple than I was, though. Our next game is, though, Cincinnati 24, Notre Dame 13. And I'm going to let you start because you were actually at the game, like we mentioned at the top. So I want you to go first.
Well, and I will say this, like in most games that I cover, like when we go to Iowa, Penn State this weekend or any of the other ones we've done, I will be paying very close attention to each drive and have these all charted out. Saturday was a bit of a shit show. Okay. So we drove from Indianapolis where Joey Chestnut lives. And we thought, you know, we have plenty of time. We're going to leave. It took a lot longer than we thought. And so we got to the tailgate kind of late. We got in the stadium kind of later than usual. So from the get, it was kind of playing catch up all day, which, you know, weirdly is how Notre Dame was. So, I feel them on that level, but, the environment was incredible. I mean, the tailgating, even though it was raining during actually a big part of the pregame, the Notre Dame fans always great, you know, out in full force. A lot of Cincinnati, about a third of the stadium over there was good red, you know, wave over there.
I wrote a bunch complaining that Notre Dame fans need to stop selling their tickets to visitors.
I talked to the, you know, I was with a lot of the athletic staff, and I was actually in the box, you know, the president's box, and it was crazy. Tim Brown was in there, a couple other former Notre Dame players, and the baseball coach, who I can't remember his name right now, but he's awesome. So I was chatting. Yeah, really great guy. And he had some great stories, and he loved Joey. He tried all of Joey's sauces and then actually left with all bottles of the sauce because he loved them so much. So shout out to him. But they were saying that Cincinnati used all their allotted tickets and more. So they not only gave them their normal allotment, they ended up giving them more because they had requested. So I don't know if it's Notre Dame's fans' fault.
Go back and look at the crowds when Georgia came to town in 2017 or even back to like Nebraska in 2000. This sometimes happens for big games where Notre Dame fans, for whatever reason, are okay selling their tickets off a little bit more than they, I think, should. It's on my Twitter if anyone else is interested. I kind of compared the photos of like the crowd at Cincinnati and those other two games I just mentioned. Maybe it's the color red that just shows up a little bit more.
People were saying because it was like Christmas colors, like with the red and the green. So...
Yeah, no, and it definitely wasn't as bad as like the Georgia game was because that was basically a Georgia home game in South Bend, but it does happen like that. And it, you know, it just happens. Like I know a lot of Notre Dame fans will say like, oh, well, it's such a special game for them and it's just another game for us. But like,
it was a special game for them.
But like, I don't want it to be Notre Dame fans. Just like just another game. It was a top 10 matchup. You should want to be at that.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And you know, I'll say this about, I was watching the game, not with the discerning eye that I normally have as like a writer, you know, because I was taking more of environmental factors and, and dealing with Joey, but Kim was shooting the game on the field. So she was down in the action. And one of the things that we both agreed on is Notre Dame while they made a lot of mistakes, when they were starting to get back in it, they have a different attitude. This is my problem with Cincinnati. I kind of believe in them now a little bit more than usual. Desmond Ridder is the truth. I will say that. Like,
oh, he Notre Dame fans.
He's incredible.
On,
yeah.
He's on Notre Dame fans shit list in a big way right now.
Because of how good he is?
No comments he made after the game in his press conference.
Okay, so this...
talk about that in a second.
Yeah. This may speak to what I'm about to say, but I didn't see the press conference, but during the game, Cincinnati, when they would do anything good, get a first down, basic things that football players get, they would just make a huge show out of it. I mean, like, so arrogant and so cocky after every single play that you almost wanted to root against them because you're like, who are you that you're doing these things? But, like,
yeah, they were jazzed up to an extreme amount.
Yes. That game. It was like too much.
Well, it is a huge game for them. That's like the biggest regular season game.
You've been there though, like win with some.
But in all fairness, they've never been there. That's the
it was very obvious.
Like, this is something we should mention here. That was by far the biggest regular season win in Cincinnati football history. Not of recent course. History, all of it.
But they're ranked in the top 10, so act like you belong there.
But don't act like Dame, a top 10 matchup. Puts them in a good position going forward for the rest of the year. It was huge for them. The comments that Ridder made after the game was basically that when he got in there, he was like, oh, all right, this isn't a tough place to play. This is easy. He said that UCF in 2018, the day game day went there, was by far the toughest he's ever played in, and made that the bounce house that game made Notre Dame Stadium look like, you know, like basically like a home game. You know, it was, he did not, he came after Notre Dame fans for being, you know, sitting on their hands and being passive compared to,
interesting,
compared to other environments he's played in, and specifically UCF as an environment. So, so mixed emotions for some of us.
it was,
but Notre Dame fans were not happy with that comment that he made.
I was not happy with their behavior, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I get that it's exciting for you, but every single first down you have to get up and point. Like, come on now. They were winning most of the game. Like, that should be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of the game itself, Notre Dame played three quarterbacks in this game, which is a recipe to lose. It just is.
It's got to be some sort of record for a top 10 matchup.
Especially when none of the quarterbacks came out due to injury. They were just figuring it out as they went along.
They were just trying to, I mean,
for those who don't know the Notre Dame quarterback situation right now, they brought in Jack Cohn as a graduate transfer from Wisconsin. He's supposed to bridge the gap between Ian Book last 3 years and then Tyler Buchner next year is the expectation on that. Tyler Buchner is a stud prospect from California. Right. A lot of fans want Buchner to play. He's athletic. He can run a little bit. He didn't play his senior year of high school because of COVID and everything out in California. So I don't think he should be on the field at all. I think he just needs time to develop and adjust to the speed of it. Then Drew Pine, who was the backup last year, did something in the offseason no one expected. He pushed for the starting job in a way that no one saw coming. Last week against Wisconsin, Cohn was struggling, frankly. Then he got hurt because he was Cohn is taking like 5 sacks a game when he's out there because he's not super aware of himself in the pocket, it seems, and his athleticism isn't there. Pine came in and Pine kind of set the offense on fire towards the end of the game. It got going. It looked better under him. A lot of fans want Pine to start this game. He didn't. Cohn, according to Kelly, earned it. They played Buchner a couple drives. It didn't. That first half did not work for Notre Dame going between Cohn and Buchner. You know, Cohn threw an interception in the end zone on a ball he should never have thrown because he wasn't.
Right.
He was just trying to force something. He was trying not to take a sack. And he threw it up for grabs. Gardner intercepted that, if I'm not mistaken. Buchner, being a freshman, gotten hit in the chest and threw a bad ball. That guy intercepted and returned inside the 10-yard line. That's up Cincinnati's first points.
Are you really going to go through every mistake they made?
Yeah, I am. Then that was immediately followed by the Chris Tyree fumble on the hear me out. That was followed immediately. Chris Tyree fumbling the kick return. Last week, he's the hero and returns one for a touchdown against Wisconsin. Fumbles against Cincinnati. Sets up another. That's 10 points right there. And really, the defense shouldn't be blamed for any of those 10 points on Notre Dame's side of it.
Okay. That's fair.
From there on, Cohn was just mediocre for the rest of the half. If you watch the NBC broadcast at all, you'll know that Drew Brees was talking about how basically they need to bench Cohn. And that's what happened. Pine got the second half. And Notre Dame's offense was much more effective the second half. Cincinnati really only had 2 drives that whole game where they scored on the Irish defense properly, you know, going downfield and driving on them. So I thought it was a exactly what I expected, to be a really great defensive game where Cincinnati beat the Notre Dame offensive line enough to keep them from winning. That's what I thought it would be last week. Alec Pierce for Cincinnati also deserves a lot of credit because he had a really great game in the downfield passing. Michael Mayer for Notre Dame. Cincinnati could not cover Michael Mayer. I knew that was going to happen. It was a shame. It looked like he had a hamstring injury towards the end that slowed him down. You know, and then I think the only thing to ask is Cincinnati to the college football playoff realistic, or is that just a thing that we're going to talk about and, you know, and forget about as a group?
I said on Memphis radio this morning that it's like this win is okay. It's fun. It's great for Cincinnati and it's like historic and whatever, but it's, to me, it feels a lot like the Stanford win over Oregon. Like, for what? You're not going to go to the playoff. You know what I mean? Notre Dame had a, no, I mean, and I'm not saying it to be mean. It's just, it's reality that I don't think the committee is going to take a group of five yet. They're just not there. If they're not approving a 12 format, they're definitely not taking a group of five. That's just,
no, the, you're right. They're definitely not.
But Notre Dame had a real shot, you know, if they win that.
Notre Dame was going to lose a game eventually. That offensive line is just not good enough to, they're going to get caught by someone.
At least, what I'm saying is like for Oregon, for example, Oregon had a real freaking shot of representing the Pac-12. Not with a one loss. Well, and if they're going to lose this game, I don't know. Anyways, that it just felt to me, it was like, okay, Cincinnati, you're winning this game for what and for why? And is this good for college football?
I think it is to have that kind of balance between the powers that be in like the G5. I also think that there's going to be two SEC teams in the playoffs. So,
yeah,
you know, the first playoff rankings are not too far from now. And, you know, a couple weeks at the most, Cincinnati is going to be high, probably top six, and watch them not lose, but slowly slide back as we go. Well, they only played Temple this week. It's really hard to judge them based on that. And, you know, well, who'd Alabama play? Well, they played Mississippi State. You're like, but they're not that good either, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, but they're still going to slowly slide as teams just, you know, quote unquote, have better wins. And they really, until they play SMU at the end of the year, won't have another chance to have one of those statement wins. And even then, beating SMU doesn't count as the same statement for the committee as beating Ole Miss does for Alabama this past weekend, even though they stomped Ole Miss, you know?
Right.
So, no, I don't think the playoff is realistic. Though you are in the driver's seat for the New Year Six, you're in the driver's seat for the conference.
Yeah.
You know, chance to be a really great year. And, you know, when Cincinnati goes unbeaten and wins the, you know, whatever, the Cotton Bowl or whatever it will be this year, Fiesta Bowl, declare that natty.
Yeah.
Take that natty just like UCF did. Nothing to stop you, no harm in it. But, yeah, Cincinnati was the better team than Notre Dame. You know, if Notre Dame was the better team, they wouldn't have quarterback issues. They wouldn't have left tackle issues.
Right. So,
since he deserved the win. Our next game, Tulane 29, ECU 52. You pick Tulane. Why?
I will always pick Tulane. That's like my one. It's going to be a problem, especially because it's Michael Pratt. I'm sorry. Yeah, I can't. I love the kid as a person. I thought last year he was great, but I gave him that freshman. You know, he was a freshman. So I was like, it's only going to get better. Mm-hmm. It has not gotten better. It has gotten way worse. And at this point, I think if you're Fritz, like you have to think about that you have other parts of your offense that are working, but if you can't have a quarterback, he's not working. It's got to be something else.
I'm not quite there with Pratt, but the turnovers are a major issue and they are not.
It has been nonstop. Point. It's been every single game.
At this point, they're not going away.
No.
And that is a huge problem for them. You know, as far as ECU goes, though, they've found that consistency on offense that they didn't have the first couple weeks, especially with Ehlers. Right. You know, Ehlers was not outstanding in this game, but he was solid and reliable, and he didn't make those turnovers. You know, he didn't do those, like, you know, I talked about the South Carolina game and his performance in that a lot because it really bothered me because I thought they were better than South Carolina and they should have won that game. Except Ehlers made a bunch, you know, he had a couple bad penalties in the quarterback position. He like was bouncing checkdowns. He just didn't look comfortable. You know what I mean? And he looks worlds better now. And this is the issue. I just want a full, he's a senior now, so we're not going to get it, but I just wanted the full season of consistent Ehlers to see how good ECU could have been, because I do think this team around him is so much better than, you know, they're showing that growth and maturity that we haven't seen there since, you know, Ruffin McNeil was the head coach. And that's awesome for ECU because their fan base deserves it. And again, the conference is changing now. Who's going to step up and replace the teams leaving as kind of that upper echelon? Why not ECU? Right. You know, I mean, I know SMU
and Memphis
are still going to be around, but like, who's going to replace UCF and Cincinnati and Houston as like the teams you look to? I think ECU really has a good shot to do it. They just need to, you know, refigure out how they recruit again, because I, you know, teams like Charlotte, App State, Old Dominion moving to FBS hurt them in recruiting because they lost a lot of that. We're the FBS team in the area for kids, and they need to, you know, they needed to take the time to let Mike Houston develop this team because they were so far down when he got there that you couldn't expect, you couldn't expect a, you know, 2-year turnaround miracle. It is going to take a while to get completely back to where you want to be, but I think they're on the right path.
They are. And Houston is the guy for that job. He's like the program whisperer everywhere he's been. Yeah. So
the one hope is that he doesn't, you know, go 7-5 this year or 7-5 this
and
year.
Leave. And leave. He told me he's not going to, leave. He told me
I know
that.
I know that he's been to a few schools already. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, you know, Mac Brown retires and North Carolina comes calling in. That's
he's not going to do
it. Look, but I don't think he's gone in a year or two anyways. I'm saying that's the concern that really all AAC schools always have when they've got a up and coming coach is that they're going to lose them. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, like, it'll be the concern at USF if Jeff Scott gets them going the same way it was with Willie Taggart once he got them going, or, you know, UCF, the past couple of coaches, Memphis, their past couple of coaches, you know, Houston, you know, Tom Herman, you know, Temple, the last like 5 coaches have all left for bigger jobs. It's a concern. You know what I mean? It happens a lot in this conference. We mentioned him briefly earlier, Keaton Mitchell, 15 carries for 222 and 2 scores. That's a great day for a freshman running back. That's another way to help Holton Ahlers out is to develop a running game that they have not had in recent memory. I love watching Tyler Snead play wide receiver. Really great time. Tulane, I expected more out of their defense this year, though. They're pretty consistently getting beaten up on defense, which I didn't see coming. I knew they had some guys gone, but I thought they'd be an average defense in this conference. They look below average.
Yeah. So,
Tulane wants to make a bowl game. They're 1-4 now, and it's desperation time for that.
Yeah.
ECU at a 3-2, pretty good spot to make a bowl, though.
Pretty good sitting pretty, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm still going to probably pick Tulane. Actually, next week, I forget who they play.
No, I know. They're Thursday night. Houston.
Oh, yeah, it's Thursday night game. Yeah, that's right. Like, okay.
Do you remember? This is a preview of the preview episode, but it's – do you remember 2 years ago when Houston went into Tulane and Tulane
– Yeah, I was there.
Yep.
I was at that game.
It's like a Thursday night. It matches up exactly. It's at Tulane. I'm excited for it, even though I think that –
You know what's funny is I was going to go this week because it's tradition for me to be at that game. That was the first ever Tulane game that I covered. And it was like this, you know, big upset. And there was this, oh my God, I'll never forget Jalen McCleskey with the catch from Justin McMillan. McCleskey and McMillan.
They were in the annexation of Puerto Rico play.
Oh my God. That was when I was like, Willie Fritz is the man. He dialed up this play. It was epic. That's when my like love affair with Tulane started. I was like, this is the program. I love it.
I think a lot of people did back to, you know, around then when Tulane's, because they were wearing the baby blues in that game too.
Yes. The baby blues.
You know, so I'm telling you, that'll be a fun game, but I don't trust Tulane right now, especially on defense. And it's, like you mentioned with Pratt's turnovers.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
They did, in all fairness to Tulane, they did threaten a comeback in the third quarter, but you know, it got put down.
Yeah.
UCF 30, Navy 34.
How are you feeling about that?
No excuses, but quarterback, running back, top wide receiver, all out with injuries, you know, mismatched defense with injuries. No excuses, but the real reason there's two reasons UCF lost this game. The first is special teams.
Okay.
An extra point got blocked. A punt got blocked and returned for a touchdown right before the half. That's 8-point swing right there. How many did you lose by? Oh, you lost by 4. Probably could have used those 8 points. Probably could have just used the extra points so that when they got down to the 15-yard line or so, they could have kicked a field goal to tie it instead of having to throw into the end zone and, you know, ending the game on that. That's before you consider a shanked punt. that gave Navy a short field late in the fourth quarter to take the lead on. Because, you know, nothing like bad special teams. That's going to drive Gus absolutely insane. It's also very clear he does not trust his special teams. Like, before the half, they had a chance to kick their first field goal of the year in game. Let me count them down. Four. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that would be the first field goal of the year. And he faked a kick and then got down. And it was basically the only reason he took a kick was because there was 1 second left on the clock. He did not want to kick the ball. He does not want to kick the ball. He doesn't trust Obarski. He doesn't trust the special teams unit that he inherited from Josh Heupel. And that is an issue. Heupel left nothing for special teams. He ignored it. He didn't coach it well. It's a whole unit that needs to be completely fixed, and it's not fixed yet, very clearly. The other reason UCF lost this game, and again, it's not the injuries. It's because Navy found a quarterback who can get the Ty Lavate. He can get the ball to the edge in that triple option, and they got the edge pretty consistently in that triple option, and UCF simply couldn't consistently stop it. They forced a couple turnovers, but they only forced one punt all day. Let me tell you something. Navy ran 80 plays, 80 triple option plays. I think technically 78 triple option plays because they threw twice. That exhausted the UCF.
I was going to say, was that exhausting to watch?
It was. It was especially by the fourth quarter when – by the fourth quarter, the UCF defense was just so clearly out of gas and wasn't going to stop them again. 39 and a half minutes worth of time of possession for Navy.
Wow.
I'm not a big time of possession guy, but that does something.
It does matter sometimes. Like,
Exhausts the defense if it's that lopsided.
Yeah.
And that was all very clear. And you know what? In all of this, UCF still could have won the game if your graduate transfer senior wide receiver doesn't fumble the ball at midfield in the fourth quarter. Mm. You still could have run out the clock. Mikey Keene replaced Dylan Gabriel at quarterback.
What'd you think?
He was solid, especially considering he's a freshman in his first game. The interception on his ledger was the last play of the game, him throwing into the end zone, trying to make something happen. I don't blame him for that. I thought Gus's first half strategy with him was very good. It was a creative running scheme, especially considering the injuries to the running back room, keeping the passes fairly simple and not too difficult, but I thought he looked good, obviously room to grow, but I think you can see the potential in him. I am also going to say this because I just talked a lot about why UCF lost the game. Navy also went out there and won the game. They forced the turnover. They went down and scored when they needed to, came back from like 13, 17 down and won that game. Navy gets
it all was the really the Navy gets all the recovered block pump
that right before the half that sucked. Yeah.
The blocked punt in the end zone.
No, but touchdown. Navy went out.
I feel
there.
Like if there's one play that sums up that game, it has to be
it was really, really bad. And right before the half, too, like complete momentum, everything.
Talk about just deflating. Yeah,
it was terrible, but No, but Navy went out there and won the game. I feel I'm really happy for them, especially like Mia Mazzarello, who's been under a lot of fire for how they've been playing. Yeah. I don't know if did you get a chance to see the broadcast?
I did not, no.
Okay. So the Navy fan, I shouldn't say fans, like the brigade and like the freshman players were going crazy. You had a bunch of the freshmen who were wearing the blue shirts that just say Navy across them, and they kept cutting to them in the UCF's last drive to try to tie because they're going crazy. Like, basically needed to be held back in the field. And at one point, a bunch of them take off their shirts and start dancing around. And Ken goes over to them, and it's like 20 seconds left in the game with a timeout. And the commentator, I don't know who it was, it's one of the CBS sports guys, goes, oh, there's Ken going to tell them put their shirts back on. And then you see Miyamoto Lolo show them how to wave them like towels. And it's like, no, he's
stop.
Not. Yep. Then they cut.
That's the swagger they need.
They cut to the UCF sideline. They're discussing something in the timeout. They cut back and the brigade, like all the, Naval Academy students are like forcing their way onto the sidelines, onto the field, pushing right at the edge. They cut back to Ken. And at this point, he was on all fours on the ground, staring at the ground. He didn't even want to look at the play. I felt very happy for Navy at the same time, feeling kind of crappy for my team,
Yeah. But he needed it so bad. So he did. Like when you see a team with their heads down, their backs just on the wall, like seeing them come out swinging like that and like fight to win a game. That's the kind of stuff that,
And again, it clearly mattered so much to them that I was like, you don't mind losing to Navy.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, it sucks because it's a conference loss. It sucks because it makes next week against ECU a must win. I'm not super confident after the way ECU looked up, against Tulane, but It was a very good game.
I like it.
It was feel good. Yeah. It was a very good game. UCF has some things to work on still. I think there's still a ton of talent. I think they're still one of the best teams in the conference, but they're not, you know, injuries and bad special teams will destroy a season. And that's what could very well be happening to them. You know, one more, anything else to add to that?
No, I just, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how they build on it. Going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Last game of the week, USF 17, SMU 41. You know, USF hung around a little bit longer than I think that score indicates. Again, Timmy McLean was fine. He wasn't outstanding, but he, like, again, he's a freshman. He's showing that he's got something to build off of. I really like Jimmy Horn, the wide receiver at USF. I think he's doing a very good job filling that gap of talented wide receivers that they really haven't had in the past couple years there. You know, good to see USF fight for the whole game. SMU was just very clearly the better team overall and way too explosive for them to handle over the course of 60 minutes. Yeah.
SMU is that guy. And now you have this team that's so fun to watch offensively. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting at 5-0. And mm-hmm. somebody asked me today, like, mm-hmm. do I think they could go undefeated? Not the way the American.
They have to play Cincinnati and then probably, again, this is projecting, but probably twice play Cincinnati in regular season and conference championship.
Interesting.
That's projecting, obviously, you know, it's a little bit of a guess, but they're clearly the top two teams, at least in terms of where they're at now. You know, SMU just got
offensively,
ranked.
Yes. I don't know. SMU's defense.
It's been their issue for years now. You know, they've had that off. No, I'm not sold either. Tanner Mordecai needs to clean up the turnovers still, you know.
Yes. That is like a thing in this conference is quarterback turnovers. Yeah,
there's a few gunslingers. Gunslingers out there.
Be a little more careful. You don't want to shoot yourself in the leg.
Well, yeah, you know, it happens, but
it has happened.
It happens. I think SMU, if you project their season down the line, is mm-hmm. probably the second best team in the conference, and you'd expect the conference championship game to be them in Cincinnati, right? And that's not out of line to project at this point.
I don't know. I think I'm going to,
What happens when they play?
I'm going to go for a crazy dark horse.
Is Dylan Gabriel healthy when they play UCF? Because that could completely change that game. You know what I mean? We don't know that. You know.
Maybe, but do you think he comes back? Like, this is my thing with guys that come back from those kinds of injuries. It's tough.
It'll be interesting. It's his throwing shoulder. It's no surgery required. It's no surgery, and there's no time.
But it takes one big hit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We don't know We don't know he's even coming back this season. That's something I should also say.
Yeah.
There was no timetable given. I'm basing that on the fact it's described as a fractured collarbone with no surgery required. Mm-hmm. Generally, that's like 6 to 8 weeks in an adult. But I'm not a doctor. I've not examined him. No one's given updates about how long it'll take. It's not fair to project. So you're right. I shouldn't do that. But if he is back, I think he's capable of making that a game, you know, on his good days.
His veteran.
But we don't
nature.
Know that he'll be a good day if you're right. If he's back from an injury that soon.
So. His ability could suffer from this, but his presence and his like veteran play that adds a layer to UCF and confidence.
It'll also help UCF when they get Isaiah Bowser back to get that kind mm-hmm. of hard runner. I really like Johnny Richardson. I know we're supposed to be talking about USF SMU right now,
There wasn't a whole ton to say other than SMU
dominating. That was the easy game.
USF showed a little fight, you know, putting up. I like that they keep doing that where they're not rolling over. They're like continuing to at least put up points and not get shut out, you know?
That's important because it looked like after the NC State game week 1 that, oh no, USF is just going to sleepwalk. Right. You know, so again, projecting out, I project SMU is probably the second team in the conference championship game. You got to project USF is going to show improvement over the course of this year because they're at least fighting. I think there is a little bit of growth going on there. I just don't know that the wins are going to fall this season. You know, I think you're looking at probably next season if you're a USF fan before you see more tangible results, you know?
Yeah. And my thing about SMU is now you've got this monkey on your back of undefeated nature. And every week it's like, this is the first time they've been 5-0. This is now 6. And then you have to worry about that.
If you're SMU and you got to have faith that you can win every game, you got to, your goal as SMU is obviously to win the conference. You have to beat Cincinnati to do that. You know, they've got all these
goals.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. They've got this monkey on their back of winning a big game. They've got a lot of things that they have to prove that they can do before. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will be like, yep, SMU's arrived.
It's just an extra thing every week where you're like, oh my God, we don't want to blow our undefeated streak. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that weighs in or doesn't. Like it's different. Every player, every coach.
Yeah.
But it's there. It's not like they don't know, hey, we're undefeated.
And the same time, some guys can use that as like, hey, I'm undefeated. What are you? You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right. They can use it as motivation.
That's
right.
Confidence. It's so, yeah.
I'm weirdly excited for SMU at Houston in week 9.
No, that'll be a good game.
Right. I'm very intrigued now by that. Because
I feel weird about Houston. I'm not sure how to, yeah. I'm supposed to feel about them. I think I had them at like number 3 in the power rankings I do this week, which felt gross putting them that high. I didn't feel comfortable.
Like you need a shower maybe.
Yeah. Just like, I don't believe that. Why'd I put them there? But you know, like at some point you are what your record says you are. And you have to trust that 4-1 is 4-1 for them.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
The American. Did we ever think it was going to be easy?
It's Cincinnati, it's SMU, and then it's a kind of a pretty steep drop off this year.
I am like pushing for ECU to make a dark horse race here because how crazy would that be?
I'd love it. They get a regular season shot at Cincinnati this year.
Yep. Yeah. Where is that game? Like where would they do they?
I think that's in Greenville. I'm not certain though.
East Carolina, because they have a pretty good, and it's so funny. We keep talking, or we did talk a lot about like home team advantage in this conference, but that's really turning out to not be as much of a thing as we thought, or at least I thought.
Well, you know? We'll talk about it more in the preview, but I think that when UCF and ECU play next week, I think the fact that at the bounce house is a huge, huge deal for UCF because their two losses are on the road and they have in the past few years not been good on the road. And again, it's a new coach now and things are going to change with that over time, I think, for Gus. But one of the issues that Josh Heupel left was a team that did not travel well. And, you know, I don't think Gus has corrected that at this point. You know what I mean? I think that that issue is still there. There's a lack of focus on the road for UCF sometimes.
Cincinnati plays at home, though, they're almost unbeatable.
Yeah.
Week 13. That's so far away.
On October 23rd, ECU at Houston. ECU at Houston. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And after that, South Florida, Temple, Memphis, Navy for ECU. So if ECU gets through these next two games, they could very well be.
They could push.
They could be very, very, they could have a shockingly good record by the time they get to Cincinnati.
I need to check in with Coach Houston again. Maybe I'll wait till after, see how they do this weekend.
Or, you know, you got to go now because you know he's on a 3-game winning streak right now. He's going to be happy.
I know, but this is a big,
be all
it's a big week for them. I hate talking to them before they have these big games.
After the UCF game, it looks like they've got a bye week. So,
yeah. So maybe we'll catch up with him then and see how he feels so far about his time in Greenville.
I'm sure he'll be very happy with where they're at right now. It's got to be right.
Yes, I think so.
Definitely.
Fun week 5.
Yeah. And a little bit of housekeeping. We talked last week about Colorado State and Air Force likely joining the American, according to plenty of reports by this week. And then they said, no, thank you. They are not interested in joining the American. It looks like there's few different reasons for it. Essentially, a lack of stability is a major, major player in that, where they don't know what the Americans' media deal is going to actually look like now, and they want a better idea of that, which is understandable. They also, the cost of traveling from way out west to all the way to like Philadelphia and Tampa and all those places, it's just probably too much financially unless they know they're getting a significant bump and everything. Air Force's athletic director today said some things about the Mountain West that were not super polite, to be frank, about what.
Really?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but he basically called them out for, you know, not being well run as a conference.
Interesting.
So I don't think that they They don't want to be in the Mountain West. I think the reason Air Force didn't leave the Mountain West was Colorado State wasn't super comfortable leaving. Mm-hmm. But from what I can tell is it was between like these board of trustees, there's divides on whether or not to leave the conference or not.
Interesting.
For the American, though, that puts them in a tough spot because plan A did not go over. Plan B has to, in my opinion, be to target strong media markets in the Southeast United States. So you need to regionalize to make the travel reasonable and try to bring in good media markets. UAB, I think, is pretty much a virtual lock. I think Charlotte's in a very good position. A lot of people.
I like Charlotte.
I like Will Healy a lot. And they,
I honestly, like, I didn't know much about it. I went out there and covered their game against MTSU. And I kind of, I'm like, I'm all in, I believe in that. And I Charlotte's such a big mm-hmm. area, you know, that they, and there's a lot of room. They're going
to, I think they'd be a very smart team to add.
Yeah.
UTSA is getting a lot of talk as well down in San Antonio. So schools like that are going to get the talk. I think you still want to make sure that you're adding schools that have some basketball presence too. If you're the American, you know, you don't want to become a one bid league in basketball. You're already only about a two and a half bid league as is. You don't want to fall down that ladder any further.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
it's hard to think about basketball right now. I can't even, I know it's starting this month, but
I don't watch the NBA, so I'm be okay ignoring it. I watched some,
but college basketball, it starts this month? October. I'm pretty sure October is like when,
I tend not to watch until like conference play just because of like, I'm so focused on football until like January, like early January. And that's around when conference play starts. So I don't notice that college basketball starts half the time.
Yeah, well, it is.
I thought it started in late November, to be honest.
Nope, it's now.
But yeah.
Not right now, but this month is the beautiful convergence. October is like basketball, football, hockey, and baseball, because you get post-games, post-season.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, my as we record this, I'm prepping for my beloved Red Sox to play in the wild card against
New
York.
Red Sox fan, okay. Yep.
JD Martinez is out. Yeah, I'm from Massachusetts originally.
I mean, I should have figured that, but we never talk about baseball, so that's kind of.
No, I talked about it briefly back when Joe was the other host of the show.
Okay.
I mentioned it back then, but
we can talk more baseball.
Well, once football season starts, I get distracted, but the playoffs. That's fair. I was also like trying not to think about the Red Sox because they were trying to blow it for the past like.
I think. Yeah, who did they play just? This last game,
they're in Washington against the Nationals.
Yeah. I was only keeping track because my partner, Kim, that I work with, she shoots for the Yankees. So she's like in the middle of trying to figure out what their wild card is going to be.
They're at Fenway tonight. Yep.
Yes, exactly. So we were keeping an eye on some of the games just to see how it would shake out. But that's funny. Well, good luck.
No JD tonight. And Chris Hill is unavailable because he pitched that last game. So I'm anxious.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed. Yeah, here we are. See, that's why people will love this podcast. You get it all. Not only do you get the AAC that you need, you're going to get stuff you didn't know you need.
Yeah, random Pac-12 rants, you know.
Joey Chestnut news, baseball posting. Pac-12,
what's going on out there?
I don't want to talk about it. I'm so upset. Like,
what
you know, I was born
and
raised.
I thought they were going to be good.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you right now, that's a program issue. So mm-hmm. I've talked to a couple people there, and that's more, not everyone has bought in on Jimmy Lake. He came into a situation where it's guys that he hasn't worked with. They're still from the old regime. Like, there's just a lot of discourse.
And
they will
figure
it.
Which is what doesn't make sense to me.
What do you mean?
Jimmy Lake was the DC under Peterson. So like, that's what doesn't make sense to me.
It's a different dynamic. Like when you step into a leading role, like you haven't been, you know, that guy, people have to believe in you to follow your lead and really buy in. And I just, it's not there. He's not the guy that everybody is saying that he is, apparently. Not that he's bad, but I think it's going to take longer than we thought. It's not going to be as seamless.
I also think they need to find a new OC because what's going on right there is not working right now.
Yeah, that's also very possible.
Also, there's so many, like, I don't know if there's another school that's blown more really good quarterbacks very under the radar than Washington has in the past like 5 to 10 years.
I have always said that everyone thinks their quarterbacks are good.
They've had some great quarterbacks come through and transfer out and end up other places. Like, isn't McNamara the Michigan quarterback a Washington transfer?
I have no idea.
I thought he was a backup at Washington. I could have sworn, or maybe it's Western Michigan's court. I heard something about someone in Michigan who used to be there. But like, you know what I mean? Like, this happens a lot to them. I feel like where they always have like good quarterbacks come through. Like, they've got a Heward, the 5-star who's on the roster now. And like, I don't know. This is so far beyond the American right now.
That's fine. I mean, we're all, you know, you should be a well-rounded football fan. So we're going to give you stuff from all over.
I do agree with that.
But yep. You know, we'll save some of it for next time. I'll save my Stanford David Shaw rant for the preview
so podcast. I know you're from California. Who did you grow up rooting for?
That Stanford is who I grew up. Like, my dad went there, so he played baseball there, and I grew up going to games, and that was like how I got into sports with Stanford athletics. So
I almost accused you of being a Cal fan, but then I remembered what you said about Berkeley, and I was like, wait a minute, she doesn't like Berkeley.
I grew up hating Cal because of the rivalry, but as I became a sports writer and started covering, Cal has always been really great to me and to media. Mm-hmm. Like, even when Sonny Dykes was there, yes, he was very secretive about, you know, practices and stuff, but he was great with media. Their staff at that time was great. And Justin Wilcox, I think, is great. So I like Cal. I want them to do well, but they have struggled to find the last bit of like the formula to get them into the top of the Pac-12. They're just not quite there.
Well, when Dykes was there, they were only good at offense. Now that Wilcox is there, they're only good at defense. And
yeah, they got to find a way. I mean, like every team to do both, because it's the same thing with Dykes at SMU right now. Yeah. They're really good at offense, but they got to find a way to.
But yeah, but like when they played Cincinnati last year, Cincinnati's defense stopped their offense, and their defense still couldn't stop Cincinnati's offense. And that becomes an issue. You know, that's why Cincinnati's.
You got to surround yourself with. You got to surround yourself with good coaches. Like, that's the mark of a truly great head coach, you know? So you cannot do it all. You physically can't. So you need to find people that you trust. And then that when it comes down to a game scenario, that you can let them take the reins. Like, you cannot micromanage everything, David Shaw. So that's...
So the rant's coming. The rant's
I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it. This is already, right. It's too much information, like, but we appreciate you listening as always. Yeah. Not that you have a choice, but.
Yep.
We still appreciate it.
Exactly. We should wrap this up now that we have been through the around the wagon.
Around the ringer.
You can find me at Dan_Morrison96.
You can find me at MLNEM, EMILNEM on Twitter and Instagram.
All right. And we are off for now.
We'll see you next time.